Hi guys, I'm Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Guys, today's episode is a really fun one for me. It is an interview with Sarah Manoni. Sarah is the Executive Vice President at Trek. Trek is a marketing slash strategy consulting group that does some really, really cool work with some high-end clients. And one of those clients that they work with is Canon Solutions America. So this episode is brought to you by my friends at Canon Solutions. If you recall, they are the company that was created by the integration of Canon Business Solutions and OSEI. And out of this, they created a one brand that has allowed them to kind of reimagine solutions for printing, document management, and business services. So they are a force to be reckoned with. They've done a lot of great stuff with Inkjet, and I'm really, really proud to have them as a sponsor of this episode. Getting back to Sarah specifically, she is someone who has worked across a variety of industries, and she's dedicated to developing memorable, meaningful, and measurable marketing programs. The thing about this conversation with her was that she was really, really thoughtful around the idea of content and how we have to interact with the marketplace. And I, although that may sound a little bit redundant to some of our listeners in with regard to this podcast, she has lived it. And what's even more fascinating about Sarah is that she is a devout follower of Dale Carnegie. In fact, she's a trainer in How to Win Friends and Influence People. And I know a lot of you have probably had that on your bookshelf since you were a teenager. And I know I certainly have, and it's a book now after talking with Sarah that I'm going to have my kids read because it's no different. Sure, the platforms have changed and the technology has changed, but when you listen to Sarah, it's the same building of trust that matters and that sincere engagement. So it was just so refreshing, and I just can't tell you how excited I was to spend time with her. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Sarah Manoni. Sarah.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you.
It's a busy day for you?
It is. I'm actually in Philadelphia today for a conference that I'm presenting at tomorrow. So
cool.
I just got into Philly and got settled in my room and looking forward to the discussion here today. So,
well, I appreciate you taking some time. I know we kind of tried to bounce around our busy schedule, so it's really...
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, I'm happy that we were able to pull this off. So
same here.
And appreciate you doing it. Do you do a lot of traveling? You said you're in Philadelphia. So are you guys conducting the event or are you just attending the event?
No, I'm just attending the event. So I'm at MailCom. If you're familiar with that at all?
Yeah.
Yep. So I'm here and presenting with Canon Solutions America, formerly the OSEI team.
Yeah.
So I'm presenting with them on basically the kind of paper to pixels AR sort of storyline. So I've got a presentation on that tomorrow. So yeah,
that's it. Cool. Excellent. Well, is Mail making a comeback?
Certain types. I mean, is what it seems to be the answer, at least based on the statistics and the reports I'm looking at.
Right.
You know, obviously the more customized and personalized beyond just, of course, names and things like that seem to be performing best, but we'll see. There's a lot of different trends and predictions out there. So
that's cool. Tell me about AR. So is that how you think that's working, and what's the future of that? What's that look like?
Oh gosh, that's a big question. Well, for us, AR seems to be working really, really well in terms of both direct mail, collateral, any kind of print pieces that we're putting out there, packaging, and where we're seeing the most sort of engagement, at least on behalf of our clients, is actually for things like trade shows and events where we're using AR as part of a traffic driving campaign.
Okay.
And we're seeing we're able to sort of either gamify the booth experience or create some interactions that last sort of beyond the initial event. So that seems to be where we're gaining a lot of traction. And we're also seeing a lot of application in training and education, which is really exciting in terms of where else the AR technology can kind of take us. So there's a lot of good stuff going on right now.
So when you do that, I mean, is AR something that's pretty trackable and gives a lot of feedback back to the marketer?
Yeah, so we put tracking mechanisms in place either through the AR platforms that we use and or with the platform and a combination of Google Analytics to be able to track what activity we're able to get with the AR experience, how many people visit it, who visits it, potentially if we can tie that back to a user profile, and then what they do within it. One of the things that we try to do is figure out within one given AR experience, what other types of content can we bring into that? Can we bring in other video content? Can we overlay data and educational information, whatever that might be? And being able to track sort of all the interactions a user takes within that AR experience so we can figure out really what's of interest to them and how they explore our content, mm-hmm. Which I think for marketers offers a really valuable piece of insight in terms of how their audience prefers to explore their story or their brand versus how a marketer thinks the user wants to hear their story or be told their story. So it does give us a lot of really insightful analytics to be able to bring back to teams. So,
yeah, it's cool. I saw I don't remember where I saw this, but I saw some winery did some like a label. And each of the labels, you know, they've got the different wines had a different historical character or something like that. And
yeah,
and they, did you see that?
Yeah, I think you might be referring to the 19 Crimes.
Wine
bottle experience.
Yeah.
So they have So each of their blends has a different. So it's an Australian-based wine company, and so they've taken and sort of personified all of these blends with these criminal characters. And when you scan the wine label, each one comes up and tells a little background as to what crime that particular individual committed and where he ended up in prison and how he got to Australia. There's this whole thing about it. So it's really kind of interesting. In terms of when I talk to people about augmented reality, and some of them are hearing it for the first time in a marketing context or a training context, I get a lot of, oh yeah, I saw that on the 19 Crimes wine bottle. it's applications like that I think make it more popular with consumers and make it more of a household idea. And then all of a sudden, though, we start to think about what else we can do with that. So I'm always interested in seeing what are some of those applications that really seem to capture kind of that consumer sentiment.
Do you think that, so talk to me a little bit about, because I grew up in this printing industry and sometimes I'll be really, really transparent and candid here. Sometimes I talk a lot about the other side of business today in terms of sincere approach, the human connection and it still matters to connect live and print matters and all that stuff. And if I'm really honest, if I'm really honest, part of that, there's got to be a part of me that is a little bit afraid of all the technology. That's a little bit afraid of marketing technologies, Google Analytics, you know, AR, how you track it, you know, and maybe even a little bit defensive to say, well, you know, you could put our ROI on anything. And does it really work? And so, you know, I find myself doing that. You know, I'm an ambassador on some level for connecting on a human level and storytelling and maybe almost unselling in some ways. And that we're just inundated with this technology. But if I'm really honest, like I said, part of that is fear. So does it work? I mean, does it work, and can it lead to sincere engagement? And you know, talk to me on the other side of it.
Yeah, I mean, from what we're seeing, it works. You know, we did a program for International Paper last year for their Adobe Max conference, and they'd never been to Adobe Max, and that was the first year they had a small 10x10 booth. And for the first time, they were trying to really attract designers. So as you can imagine, their primary audiences are either paper merchants or printers themselves. Right. And what they're really trying to do is connect with the design community and bring designers into their story to explore sort of the possibilities of what they can be doing with print and with specifically International Paper's products. So that's a long way of saying I'm trying to reach a new audience and I'm trying to create a sentimental connection or emotional connection with that audience. Mm-hmm. And what we did was we produced a series of printed characters. Each one was representative of the CMYK color palette. And we printed these characters on a flat sheet, and then they were die cut. And you could punch out the die cut, assemble your character, and then scan the character, and it would deliver a message about part of the value proposition or the value change of the Accent Opaque product that IP was promoting at the event. And then it would encourage you to take a picture, a selfie, with that character and share it on social. And so we got, and I don't have the stats in front of me right now, but I can follow up with you on those. But it was a tremendous success. And in addition to people sharing out pictures with these social characters, there were also drawings to win larger formats of each of these characters, and a follow-up campaign that we sent out after the event right around the holidays with a holiday greeting. And that just seeing sort of that the excitement and the connection that people had as a first sort of touch point and a first engagement with a brand that they were learning about, and really being able to reach that designer market in a way that or that designer audience in a way that was really compelling to them was really interesting. So I think it does work. Yeah. But I think coming back to your original question, which is, you know, sometimes being leery of technologies and digital and Google Analytics and all those sorts of things and what works and what doesn't, you know, I really think it comes down to content and what is really compelling content. If I think about the direct mail I interact with, if I think about the magazines I read or podcasts I listen to, it's really about the quality of the content itself. And I think that's going to be the same whether you're talking about print or web or mobile or AR or VR. It's really how good is the content. You know, a lot of people will produce a printed piece and then use that printed piece as a marker just to take somebody to an existing video, right? Mm-hmm. In the same way that they used to with a QR code. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that that's really not going to do them a whole lot of good. But if they can figure out how to make the experience within that AR content really intriguing and educational or fun or add value in some way, that's ultimately what's going to be much more effective than just doing AR for AR's sake, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. And that's obviously refreshing, and So let me extend that a little bit, because I think that's great. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. I think you're nurturing. I think we're in this world of nurturing relationships. Yeah. I think they can smell the hard sell from a mile away, whether you're in the room or not. Right. And so, so when you're talking to your clients and you're saying, look, I can start to build awareness, and mm-hmm. which I think is a big deal too, Sarah. I think that that it used to be, you know, you had the CEO or the CFO who's like, you know, I just want sales. I want things done. And, you know, they really wanted to just be right at the bottom of the funnel. And we live in this world mm-hmm. now where, for example, advertising, you know, people don't want to necessarily do it anymore. And because they think, oh gosh, it doesn't lead to, you know, direct sales, or I can't quantify it. Yet we're in this world that awareness, just taking someone from being unaware of who you are and what you do, mm-hmm. Like an IP at with the design community. I mean, moving them from unaware to aware is probably as critical an action or strategy that you need. And it sounds
definitely.
Right? So then it's up to them to kind of nurture it down the funnel. Am I right?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, ultimately it's about trying to figure out where's that moment where somebody realizes they need your product and service, and how do you ensure that you're there when they reach that moment in time.
Right.
And that's really where the awareness starts. And yeah, to your point, we really are at a point where nurturing is sort of everything, because the way people shop and make their buying decisions is completely different than it used to be. I mean, and then you think about, you know, the role of social that plays into that, the amount of sort of crowdsourcing of recommendations and ideas is one where we can't just ask for the sale. We can't come on in with the hard sell. We really need to be an educational voice. So that as somebody's in that sort of early awareness or consideration, you know, phase of the buying cycle, there's something there that we've done to really help educate them and help make their buying decision that much more effective. And in fact, even if they don't buy from us the first time around, if we're that educational resource, it's oftentimes they come back and we become the sort of ambassador of that information or that content. And they can, we continue to influence their buying decisions. So it's not just about the one-time purchase, but what is the overall relationship that we're building and credibility that we're building? Because ultimately that sort of credibility is what's going to lead to, purchase and then recommendations and referrals and ongoing loyalty. And ultimately thinking about building a whole pool of new brand ambassadors for our particular product or service.
Exactly. That's well said. And I, you know, in the buyers today, we've talked a lot about this, is that, you know, whether it's, well, certainly in the B2C environment, everybody just kind of, I mean, you can have countless transactions mm-hmm. in our personal lives that never have human interaction. Whereas mm-hmm. now more than ever, and I've said this ad nauseum to our readership, is that, you know, it could be 3/4 of the buying process is complete before human interaction takes place. So to your point,
definitely,
they're going through self-discovery and like you said, that content, them, you know, grabbing their attention is one thing, holding their attention is another, and doing it without, you know, being able to have kind of real human contact is even more of a Herculean effort. And I mm-hmm. I just think that's, so if you can get creative with things like AR and use the data to support that, you know, I'm hopeful. Again, this goes back to, you know, the transparency and maybe some of my nerves, if you will, that we're in a day and age, kind of a heyday of marketers, that a lot of us grow up not really wanting to be in sales because, oh, we don't, you know, long time ago it was like, that's kind of, I don't want to say icky, but I don't want to necessarily swindle people out of their cash kind of deal. I mean, it's
right. You used to Yeah, that perception of the negative perception of the salesperson. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want that anymore, and so I would rather deal on more of a sincere level, and so maybe we're going to that. Do you feel that change happening, or has it happened?
I mean, yeah, I do think I think the consumer behavior is forcing that. I think, you know, more than anything.
Right.
One of the other sort of points that I think is important is the idea that the sales process, and I know there's a sales funnel and every buying decision moves through that sales funnel. But I think at the same time, we have to recognize that it's not necessarily a linear process anymore. It's not the way that people shop is not necessarily the case that they say, oh, I'm looking for a sweater. Oh, here's my catalog with all the different sweaters that are out this season. Excellent. Here's the one I like and the color and size I want, and I'm going to go place my order. Then I might look on there. They might be looking around on their social channels for what's, you know, trending. They're on, you know, Pinterest and looking at what's in fashion this season. Then they're going over to social, you know, to another channel and asking a friend or a colleague for a recommendation on, you know, a brand they like or who has a sale on. And then, you know, they leave it alone for a few days and they come, they're, you know, on the train heading into work and they start looking again, and then they maybe come back to their catalog and they're like, what other colors is this in? So it's, you know, it's just, it's a non-linear process anymore where I have a limited attention span and I start looking at one thing and I start going down that path, and then I get onto something else, and then I go down that path for a while and then I come back. And so, you know, I think it's really important when you think about authenticity or, you know, sort of this more relationship-based selling, is also the idea that you are providing content in small pieces and small doses, and that you're doing it in all sorts of channels and in lots of different ways, because your audience is coming at your product or your brand from all these different angles and at these different points in time. And it's not just a, you know, single path to conversion. There's lots of different paths, and we need to be able to put our brand and our content in front of them across all of these different paths.
Right.
And I think that's really what makes an impression and what really creates awareness and then moves someone beyond awareness into, you know, further down sort of the buying cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I mean, it's really good stuff. So I want to come back. I want to ask you a little bit about buyers. I want to ask you a little bit about,
sure,
you know, storytelling. But before I do that, can you tell me, you know, we got to get a little bit into who is Sarah. We got to do some of that.
Sure.
All right. So tell me about Trek and tell me a little bit about your path.
Sure. So Trek is a tech-driven creative services agency. We were founded in 1995, and we were one of the original sort of digital and multi-channel agencies in the Northern Illinois area at the time. So we started out, there were a handful of websites currently up on this crazy new thing called the World Wide Web.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when our founders said, let's take our backgrounds in sales and strategy and in creative design and in engineering and technology, and let's blend those things together and create our own agency. And that's really ultimately how Trek was founded. And 22, 23 years later, and technology is still a huge part of what we do. And the technologies obviously have changed drastically, but the core of who we are as an agency and the importance of effective discovery and strategy at the forefront is really what makes us unique. We're sort of obsessed with the discovery process and learning as much about our clients, their products, their businesses, their buyers as possible. So whatever we craft, whatever technology we use, traditional, non-traditional, mobile, it all plays synergistically to help them achieve their goals.
That's cool. And how about you personally?
Yeah.
Now you've been there how long?
I started with Trek in 2006. So I've been there 12 years almost.
Okay. And so I noticed, so one of the things that I think is really, really cool about you is obviously, you know, certainly working with agents, but you are a Dale Carnegie trainer.
And I am. Yeah.
And I think that fascinating that that book was written so long ago, and yet it still holds true. And I wonder how that is, teaching that in this environment, in this day and age, and how because it's certainly worked a long time ago when you could walk in and get past the gatekeeper and talk to people, but it's a very different deal now, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think it is that different, to be honest. Okay. I think the core of Dale Carnegie is about building relationships.
Right.
And although he started a path more around public speaking, and some, sales sort of strategies, the bulk of what he's really about is relationship building.
Right.
And I think that is especially important right now. And, a lot of what we help our participants with is sort of identifying what their goals are as business professionals, and then helping them understand how the relationships that they build with those around them either help or hinder them in achieving their goals. And when they start to see the people around them as part of their success plan, that's really a shift for a lot of people. And so being able to build relationships and build self-confidence and help a person network or navigate their way through, social interactions, all of these sorts of things really are important, especially when people are moving at a faster pace perhaps than ever before and have exceptionally limited attention spans, and they're distracted by technology, or technology can misconstrue a message. So, really, I think it's exceptionally valuable now, and as much so as it was, originally 100+ years ago when Dale Carnegie started teaching. So it's an interesting crossover. And as a manager and a leader, I find it exceptionally useful because it's just a real reminder as to the difference between managing people versus leading people and inspiring people. And I think we need more of that in business and in general. I think that's sort of a time in history where we need those sort of influential leaders to help people navigate the business landscape that we currently find ourselves in.
That's awesome. And because it's like the first book I read when I got into business a long time ago. And I it's even applicable. I think about my kid, right? Or my kids, my 14-year-old son who, is, and this whole generation coming up is, I mean, they can have relationships with their friends online and they're used to that.
Right.
But I worry that they, at some point they are going to have to actually look up and look somebody in the eyes and, right. And it's not just the personal, because I assume that it's been adapted over time, that there's with all the channels of communication, you still have to, and you mentioned this, develop the relationships and trust, and, sincerity matters. And I would think that while some of the channels have changed, that message, you're right. And now that I think about it, maybe that not only is the message, always true, but maybe more true than ever, because we can kind of smell, like I said, we can smell the hard sell from a mile away. It's a kind of a no BS world. And so they want to know that you're there, in a truthful and honest way. So it's an interesting, how did you get into that? How did you what made you decide to jump into that?
Yeah. So, I read How to Win Friends and Influence People when I was a teenager. I remember my dad had given it to me to read. And then I think I read it again in college. And then I think it came on my radar again somewhere in grad school. So I'd read the book a few times. And then actually I met my husband, and he's a Dale Carnegie trainer. And he's been with the company for 15+ years, and I had the opportunity to take the course through him and through the Carnegie Office Center of Excellence in New York City. So I took the course. I kind of thought that I knew what I needed to know and that I was a bit skeptical, honestly, to see what I was going to really take away from it. And it turned out to be hugely impactful revealed a lot of blind spots for myself and areas of opportunity for my own growth. And so I really gained a whole respect for the content of that program and the trainers and the way that they facilitate training versus lecturing. And then they basically invited me to come and sort of try out for becoming a trainer. And then I went through a pretty intensive certification process and then eventually did become a trainer. And I facilitate probably one or two public programs for them in the evenings per year. Cool. But it's a really good way to kind of, it takes me out of my role at Trek and my marketing hat and puts on my other sort of leadership and human relationship hat and get to practice that in a different environment. And getting to educate other people, I think, is really rewarding. I love seeing that moment where, you know, people sort of have that like, aha, this all makes sense now. And here's how I'm going to be able to take this back to my team and apply it. And so it's a really nice compliment to what I do at Trek and my leadership role. And it's also nice to be able to really educate and give back to people who are on their own career, you know, career path, maybe starting their career and can learn from some of the stuff that I've learned, either good or bad. over the last 12 years of my career. So, you know, it's just about sharing the wealth, I think.
That's awesome. Now, listen, I mean, this is just what I suspect. I suspect your husband was putting the books, he was putting the book into practice when he found you. Look, how to find a girl or find a woman and marry her or something like that. So
yeah, it probably.
Yeah, I get
it. V2 of the book will be coming out in a few years.
That's right. That's cool. Well, listen, how about this? Yeah. So tell me about where you think buyers are today. You know, we have an industry and maybe specifically, you know, B2B buyers. I know you're probably there with a bunch of them and you know, with my friends at Canon Solutions. And so we deal a lot on the B2B side. How do you think B2B buyers, we've talked a little bit about technology, but you've also got generational changes. Well, how do you think they've changed over the last few years?
Oh, let me think on that one for a minute.
Yeah, they've got, you know, it's a different world and they've got different tools and maybe, you know, maybe that self-discovery piece.
Yeah. You know what I think I've noticed most recently is even more of a spirit of partnership.
Huh.
Cool. And what I mean by that is, so right now we're developing a program for Canon Solutions America Production Print Solutions for their customers. And it's basically, we call it the marketing lab or the MKTG lab. And what this is basically arming their customers with a ton of educational content on basically how to market and how to go to market with their new Canon device. Or their new OSE device, and how to generate leads and how to nurture those leads and how to convert those leads, providing them with files for as application samples that they can print and use in the sales process. Even being able to offer them some of our services as an extension of their purchase with OSE, or, you know, formerly OSE, the Production Print Solutions group of Canon. And really offering all of this value-added content, information, educational resources that their customers can use to drive their business. So they, you know, the expectation is there that it's not just what happens in the sales process and through the conversion, but what else are you doing as an OEM or as a paper manufacturer or whatever else that the business might be, to help me after the sale, to get my business up and running and to get my device up and running and for me to be generating revenue from day one, you know, mm-hmm. from my install. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think that sort of spans a lot of my, you know, when I look at my client book right now, I think that spans a lot of them that are in the B2B space where, you know, it really is about partnerships and forging partnerships between, if we look at this space specifically, between the OEMs and the paper manufacturers or the mills, and between the merchants and making sure that there are, you know, trying to break down, I mean, there's always going to be competition, right? And competition's going to influence people's decision making and in different ways in terms of, you know, sharing of proprietary content and all these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there's a general vibe, if you will, of really wanting to have more partnerships available and connections available between these different parties in the industry so that ultimately we help the printer grow their business. Because if we aren't helping them grow their business, then there isn't a whole heck of a lot of point for continuing to innovate new devices, putting out, you know, developing new paper products. Like, they need to be selling print and they need to be able to serve their customers, their end customers, and we need to help them get there. And that's to the betterment of the whole industry.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the shift I've seen, at least within the like last 12 months, that I think is probably the most visible change that I've seen in terms of what B2B buyers are looking for or what they expect from the people that they are buying from.
Well, and that's good. And I think that feeds back to what you said earlier in terms of relationships and sincerity, mm-hmm. The nurturing of the process of building that relationship, because, you know, they are looking for someone that they're not going to get into partnership with just someone they Googled, you know, and
right.
That, you know,
exactly.
So that speaks well they want a tighter connection, and that's good. And that's why I think that we're in a positive. It takes a lot of thoughtfulness and a lot of hard work. And I think that that's a good thing. And I think we're in a good place with that. So, well, listen, this has been awesome. And I, before I let you go, how about if I asked you, you know, we've got a readership that's reinventing itself, you know, constantly looking to try to get to that point of partnership and you know, you spoke about content. If you had any advice to leave them with, what would that look like?
I would say the advice is to not be afraid to put yourself out there. I think one of the things that people are most fearful of when we talk about content creation and thought leadership, blogging, social, is what am I going to say? What do I have to add to the conversation that's valuable? And are people going to like it? Are people going to listen?
Mm-hmm.
And I think right now, with such an emphasis on content, I really think it's important to just try and to see how it goes and to test the waters and to not really worry about how people are going to receive it, as long as you're being your true self and you're adding value to the conversation, monitoring the conversation, seeing what people are saying and finding an angle in there that you can have a voice. And I think that's where you ultimately start to create content that is going to resonate with someone in your audience and create that meaningful relationship. And that's sort of the initial spark that we all need then in order to grow from that and generate the kinds of content that our audiences want, and to then ultimately be able to scale that and produce the quantity of content that we all kind of need. So I think it's really to not be afraid to try and just do your thing, you know, do you.
Yeah.
Because there's room for a lot of different voices in the market right now.
Yeah, I think that's great stuff. And I agree with you. And a lot of it is, and part of that is what you said there, was not just putting yourself out there, but to listen and to monitor. And I think that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. That speaks to the, you know, again, what you said earlier about the content and the publishing process is a great way to just kind of engage. And Yeah, too often we are a little bit bashful about it, but it does,
Yeah.
You know, I think people are craving kind of that interaction, and they do want to have conversations. So,
And I think we forget about how much we all know and have learned over the years. You know, none of us is you know, the all end all has all the end all be all answers for everything, but we all come with a lot of experience and a lot of perspective, and that's valuable. Even if we don't necessarily see it or recognize it, it's going to be valuable to somebody based on where they're at in their own, to your point, discovery or exploration. So, you know, I think relying on the experience we have and having the confidence to say, you know, I can add something to this conversation is, I think, really important.
Well, and you said it earlier when you talked about your organization, and that is that you're obsessed with discovery. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I think that to be upset, because they're really, I mean, the things have changed so much technologically that mm-hmm. what I said to you earlier about being a little bit afraid, part of it's not just not understanding stuff, but a part of it is, gosh, if I learn this thing, it's changed tomorrow. And so we get a little bit nervous about that. But it's hard to actually say there are people who are necessarily experts and know what
right.
tomorrow is going to bring, but there's no shortage of needs for being experts about other people or other clients or markets, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're obsessed with discovery, like you said, then you're part of that community. And I mean, that's like anything, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, that just
right.
goes back. I mean, that's like,
well, it's like, yeah, it's like, you know, doctors are practicing physicians, right?
Right.
So we're all practitioners of our craft. We don't necessarily need to be thought leaders or subject matter experts. I mean, that's great if that's who we are. But there's something in being a practitioner of somebody who is doing this on a daily basis, and it's changing on a daily basis. And how do we deal with that change? Like, that in and of itself is a valuable story. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't
mm-hmm.
think we need to necessarily have, you know, have this idea that we are necessarily a thought leader or an expert. It's really what's happening on the day to day that's what's impacting people's lives. That's what they're doing. That's what they're feeling too. They're facing it as well. So,
yeah, I got to tell you, so we have this one magazine that we do in the financial segment, and when we first approached the client, and they were saying, well, have you written for the financial world? And I said, no. And they were kind of nervous about that, but they didn't realize that, but we asked the questions. And so mm-hmm. after the course of time, you start to ask the questions. The next thing you know, a few issues later, it's like, well, we know what the heck we're doing, or we're kind of all of a sudden have our finger on the pulse, but all we've done is use kind of a naivete and just ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lost art in this selfie generated world. And so it's refreshing to hear you talk about being obsessed with discovery, because I think that's where it's at. So, but Sarah, you know what, this has been awesome. And I really appreciate it. Listen, I get up that way. You're up in New York and, you know, I get up that mm-hmm. way. So you and I are going to need to steal away for a cup of coffee at some point. And,
I'd love to. That sounds great.
Yeah. I think this is fabulous. Tell my friends at Canon that I said hello and
I will do.
Yeah. Good luck with the presentation. I know you'll knock them dead. So,
thanks, Mark. I appreciate it.
All right, Sarah, I really appreciate your time.
Take care. Have a good one.
You too. See ya.
Bye.
Bye. Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Sarah Mannoni. She's the executive vice president of Trek. You can learn more about them at www.trekk.com. She was a delight to have on. She's clearly someone who understands that the values of the Dale Carnegie solution of how to win friends and influence people play a major role today, maybe even more so, because we need to establish trust. We need to make sure that people know we're a safe bet. And so I'm really excited that she's out there and teaching that. And I think her energy for her clients, for our industry is something that, is really, really inspiring. So my thanks certainly to Sarah for spending some time. I look forward to possibly having her on again. My thanks to Canon Solutions America. As you know, Canon is a cornerstone to our industry, and they are dedicated to reimagining solutions for printing, document management, and business services. They are now one brand, and they are a formidable force. So my thanks to them. Again, my thanks to Sarah. My thanks to you for listening to this episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. And as always, a reminder to be the buffalo. Take care.